is always do a great job in your current job, no matter what your position is on the staff.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by John Richardson, the head coach at Elizabeth City State University. A former player at Elizabeth City State, Richardson's journey through basketball has come full circle, returning to lead the very program where his playing career had begun. His coaching path includes impactful stops at Woodside High School and T.C. Williams High School before moving into the college ranks as an assistant coach at Old Dominion University and Virginia Tech. Richardson later became a head coach at both Woodside High and now Elizabeth City State, where he's known for his strong player development and culture-driven leadership. Over the years, he has built a reputation for creating disciplined, competitive programs and mentoring coaches and players alike. His experiences across high school, mid-major, and Division II levels give him a well-rounded perspective of the game. In this episode, we talk about what makes an assistant coach so impactful to a program, some of the biggest differences between mid-major, high-major, and Division II programs, as well as mistakes he did and learned from when he was a first-year head coach. Please welcome to the podcast, John Richardson. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. What's up, coaches? Welcome back to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Doug Caputo here with my guy, Alan Major. Today, we're excited to be joined by none other than the head coach, Elizabeth City State University, Coach John Richardson. Coach Richardson, welcome to the podcast.
Doug, thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Coach, again, for having me as well.
No, this was a no-brainer, man. I'm glad we made this happen. I'm excited.
Coach May just talked highly of you. I know just for the quick stint that we got to talk about it, it's obviously I'm ready to run through a wall, and I'm sure by the end of this, some people will probably be able to do the same thing. There's a lot of things, especially with you, that you have done in your career. One, I know we say this often to people, but yours, I feel specifically, your background resonates and can resonate with a lot of people, because although you were a player, you also went on, took some positions at the high school level. I saw a JV assistant, ultimately a varsity, or excuse me, JV head coach, varsity assistant, and then just worked your way up. And now you're a head coach at a good Division II school, ultimately being back home too, where you played. But just to dive into your time leading up to Elizabeth City State, going back to your early days, like, when did you first realize following that playing career that coaching was the profession and then the route you wanted to go for your job?
When I graduated from Elizabeth City State University, like every kid, you feel like that you got a chance to go and play. My minutes and my statistics didn't say that in my playing career at Elizabeth City State University. My parents reared me the right way. I kind of wanted to follow, especially my father. He was a middle school football coach and is beloved still to this day in my home area of Burke T. County. And if you've never heard of Burke T. County, shout out to the Burke T. High School Falcons. But you're lucky to even have two stoplights in the whole county. One of the most poorest and rural areas in the state of North Carolina. I've learned a lot of lessons just through my parents in that county, a lot of hardworking people there. And there's a lot of educators of color that went to HBCUs. My father went to Elizabeth City State University, so I am a legacy. My mother went to Winston-Salem State University, home of Clarence Big House Gaines. And education has always been the backbone of my family, and that's how I was brought up and raised. So I knew when I left Elizabeth City State, I was a health and PE major in teaching and education. So I knew I was going to go into teaching. I knew I wanted to somehow reach kids. I love working with and mentoring kids and being in the classroom. And I wanted to do it through sport. And it didn't take me long to, first of all, get on at Newport News Public Schools. A lady by the name of Sadie Carter, who is a ECSU alum, who was hiring, but basically she was the recruiter for Newport News Public Schools. And she basically came and got a lot of us from Elizabeth City State at the time. I was one of those that was very fortunate and blessed to go to Newport News Public Schools. And at the time, Woodside High School was being built. And so I started my career as an elementary school PE teacher, picking up. And there's going to be a story with that. Coach Major, I know where I'm going with this. But
Little Duck Goose being played at that point, too. Little Duck Goose at that.
And little did I know the school at Greenwood Elementary School, little did I know right behind it would be Woodside High School being built when I first entered in 1995. And that school in the back of those woods had changed my life forever.
Wow. Wow. What a chain of events, man. That's amazing. But the through line is ECSU. It's incredible. You got your dad, and then you got Miss Carter. Then it's just funny now that obviously the thing has come full circle, which is pretty amazing. Who was it? Did your dad encourage you to coach? Was he, or did he encourage you without saying a word? Or was there someone else along the way that actually said it? And then you're like, you know what? They may have something here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We all have our inspirations. I was just wondering who was the first person to push that button?
My father, yes, to answer your question, my father did, but he never told me. My father, I just watched my father. You know how you just watch greatness and use greatness? You don't use that loosely. I don't like using the word great. You have to really, in my eyes, be great. My father is my hero when it comes to that because of the lives that he touched. Forget the middle school championships, what means a lot to us to this day, but the lives, people, men that are, and women that are 60, that are 50, that are 40 years old right now, they all revert back to my father and some of the stories that, the inspiration that my father gave them, the encouragement that my father gave them, seeing him get up as a black man at that time and just having kids follow him. And so I wanted that. And I just saw it. My father, we never really had a conversation about what my coaching career would look like. And again, my father only got to the middle school level. I don't think my father had any aspirations of going to high school, college, or anything like that. He was just a local dude that cared about kids that would put 20 kids in his truck, pickup truck, and carry everybody home. That's all that I knew. But it touched all the lives, the parents, the people in the community. That's what they saw my father as. And so that's something that I really wanted. And so going to Woodside and coming out of college, I just knew I just wanted to do that, reach kids. I knew I wanted to coach. I didn't know. At that time, football was still my first love, even though I played basketball throughout high school and in college. But I just wanted to be around kids. And so I never really saw myself as this basketball coach that would go on to do these things that I've done. And I'm so grateful for them. But that's a kind of a complex question because it does start with my father. But I considered myself to be self-made early in my career. I was just kind of looking at other people. I was fortunate enough to be, once I got to Hampton Roads, I was fortunate enough to be around a lot of good high school coaches. And then Boo Williams had an effect on me too. When I first graduated May 7th of 1995, I went in State Farm office in May 9th of 1995. And he is the biggest icon and still is in the basketball world. But he spent 10 minutes with me just to, you know, we knew some of the same people. And I'm just going off on a limb. I'm not a good player or anything like that. But 10 minutes. And I wanted to coach one of his teams. He just wanted to be involved. And he gave me it was a conversation I will never forget. Boo is a man of little words, but powerful messages. And so I took that 10-minute conversation and said, you know what? If I can get on with Boo and kind of somehow figure out this basketball thing with Woodside High School, knowing that Woodside High School is coming down the road, let's see what happens. And that's what the initial part of my story is.
Wow.
Coach, no, it's great to hear one, like you had a good background from the family. Obviously being at ECSU,
being able to, like, one, have the family heirloom there, it sounds like your whole family, you're playing there, like, being around something that just means so much to you. That's the one thing I love is people who don't know, sports are so much more than just the ball bouncing, right? There's so many life lessons. There's so many things you can learn from it. And to be able to have the people that you have that kind of push you in the right direction. You said before, you said, I just sit back and learn and watch the coaches. I truly feel the best people learn from ultimately going in and making mistakes, but the greats learn from other people, right? Like, you can make your mistakes. And obviously, if you can learn from your mistakes, that's the toughest thing because you can actually acknowledge. But then to be able to sit there and watch somebody else and learn from every step they take and be able to take that information and form it into who you are, that just makes the coaches, or I should say great coaches, so great.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So in your time, you've had a successful career, as we mentioned, just as an assistant and not even touching your head coaching stint yet. You were named one of the top 50 most impactful assistant coaches by Silverwares Media and then top five men's basketball assistants in CUSA Conference 2020 and 2022. So back, or I shouldn't say back to back, for two of 3 years. And your definition of just being an impactful assistant, you obviously have been that. What is your definition and how can, like, assistant coaches best help their head coaches to be able to have that opportunity?
That's a great question. I'm grateful for that recognition, but, and I don't take that lightly. But for me, I would never forget what Coach Shaka Smart told me when I was at Virginia Tech, is always do a great job in your current job, no matter what your position is on the staff. And I think so many times on staffs, people fight against one another because they're always looking for the next step. And as long as you are doing the right stuff, that stuff organically is going to happen. You have to know your head coach. And I was fortunate to work for three really good coaches. Their wins speak for it, their record speaks for itself. And Blaine Taylor, Seth Greenberg, and Jeff Jones. But each one of them are different. And I had a different role on the staff. And so when you're going in to those positions with Coach Taylor, I started out as adobo. So a de facto manager slash, and I'm coming out of high school winning back-to-back state championships. And so the humility part of that was unbelievable, but it was sorely needed. If I need to go and take something over to across campus to the president's office, or if I needed to escort a lady from her car at one of our external functions off campus, the parking someone's car so that they could be at the facility, being able to pick up sandwiches on post-game meals, anything that you can do that will help the program. And you got to, again, no job is too big and no job is too small. And you have to be able to get in where you fit in. I thank Coach Taylor for just giving you an opportunity. And then you have a conversation with your head coach and ask him, what do you need from me? How can I make you better? Because your job as an assistant coach is to take as much off his or her plate than for anything. No matter what it is, to make sure that he or she can be able to be the best versions of themselves when it comes to coaching their basketball team. And so that's what I would say that I tried to do. For me, I don't ever meet a stranger. So the recruiting part of it for me was just natural. I was a high school coach. I knew what high school kids needed. AU, I was with the best, one of the best AU programs in the country at the time. So I had a lot background, a lot of cheat notes, if you will. I had the answers to the test. I first got to Old Dominion. But then it was just about humbling yourself and just doing the best job at any task that's assigned to you, no matter what. Film exchange, I know we probably don't have that. This is different now, but I had the old VHS. I had to stack them up.
Back to back.
I'm with you. And again, that was a whole task in itself.
100%.
That's a project. with itself. And so for any young coach out there that's looking to get into, I don't care if it's junior varsity, college, JUCO, whatever the case may be, if you are an assistant coach, just do the best job that you possibly can in your present situation.
Yeah, no question, man. No, it's an art form to hit play and pause on one recorder and record and pause on the other recorder. And that's magic now. To make that work, that was a whole different deal. I know I'm dating both of us, Dougie, as I say this, but that's what it was, man. Yeah. That's what it was. But now I'm glad you said that, Jay Rich. Obviously, we're in such a fast-paced society. Everybody wants it yesterday. And delayed gratification is almost like you say that now and you get looked at maybe like you got three heads. But when it part of being as your high school head coach and then stepping into college, I know the recruiting part, you kind of hit the ground running in a way because, again, you just been on the other end of those conversations. So now you're on the opposite end of those conversations.
Yeah.
What else do you feel maybe translated from high school to college in addition to the recruiting part from being a high school head coach and now you get to the college level? And again, example, maybe being on the floor, but I don't know what the rules were. Maybe you couldn't be on the floor at that time. They changed up that stuff so much, but was there anything else that translated from coming to high school and the college other than the recruiting piece?
For me, when you are a head high school coach and you have your own way of doing things, first of all, you're a teacher. So you have to be organized. You have to have a role. You have to be able to take attendance. You have to be able to input grades. You have to be able to grade papers. So you have to be able to have a certain level of organization, okay? And that translated to college for me because at the Dobo, there were certain things that I had to be able to organize to have as far as the travel, the budget, some of the stuff that you have to do in that capacity. For me, I sat down and watched the World Oil Machine. I watched Blaine Taylor, Jim Corrigan, Travis Secure, who's the head coach at Montana now, and Rob Wilkes. So I watched the staff, an elite staff, where I could not be on the floor. So for me, I went from being on the floor yelling, barking, and doing what I do at the high school level to essentially being on the bench, being back on the bench. Like I spent some time at least ECS shoot. So I'm sitting and I'm sitting behind a computer because at that time I'm learning Exos and how to chart games and all that kind of stuff. You know, the question was, what translates? Well, yeah, the basketball, you based off the knowledge that you have. But to be honest, coach, for me, you a neophyte. You really don't know a whole lot because college and high school are just two separate entities.
Different games.
It's basketball. The basketball may, depending on where you are, it's basketball. There's really nothing new under the sun there, okay? You zone, man, how you teach it, coming off screens, now you got balls. All that stuff kind of stays the same. But the infrastructure of how to build a program, it was priceless to me for me to sit down as somebody that really never seen it as a player, and especially at the Division I level, for me, it was priceless for me to sit down for 3 years and to watch three assistants and a head coach essentially go to work. And every day in practice, as hard as it was, now, don't get me wrong, you're sitting in the chair and you're like, put me in, coach. But when I look back on it now, I got a chance to see how to really teach a zone defense. I got a chance to see how much rebounding actually, and we were one of the better rebounding teams in Blaine in that era. But I got a chance to see what point of emphasis looked like. I got a chance to see what a detailed practice plan looked like. So translation is cool if you are humble enough to be able to be open-minded to say, you know what, let me come in and learn and then absorb all of these nuggets that's being deposited into me. And then when I get my opportunity to be able to get out on the floor, I actually know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, you're right, though. You got to see it A to Z, from June to July or whatever yearly cycle you want to call it. There's so much more. I always tell people, when you're a head coach, man, basketball's like 25% of it. The other 75% is what people don't see and the things that you have to do. Absolutely. So you got a graduate degree in that alone, just from the other A to Z stuff.
Yeah. And Coach, one thing I will add to that, I think a lot of the younger aspiring coaches struggle with that. I think they come in believing or thinking that the basketball is 75% and the other miscellaneous stuff is 25%. And if the coaches that could get that piece, that understand that the basketball is just 25% and the miscellaneous stuff, 75%, that means putting out fires. That means making your head coach look as great as he or she possibly can. Those are the people that are going to not only survive, but thrive in this business.
Yeah. Said, man, that's a big one right there. That'll hit a few people in the mouth and they may not like it, but that's facts, man. That's generationally, that's okay. And that's part of every cycle. Every generation has its cycle of things that go down, but that one's where we are right now. So the more people that grab that and run with it, they'll be in great shape.
Your means of communication, like, this is one thing that I've always known, but I never really like fully grasped it until your verbiage or the way you communicate, right? If you go up to a kid and you say something one way, but you mean it a different way, but you're maybe a word or two off and it doesn't sound like, the kid may not take it exactly how you're thinking it. So the way you communicate with people, one, and I'm not even talking about basketball, I'm talking about just maybe, hey, why haven't you been doing this? Maybe your verbiage was wrong and then this kid gets really mad about it or whatever it is, or even basketball. Hey, you say something about being on the court and he takes it a completely wrong way, or maybe hears it a wrong way. It's like your verbiage, your communication, that completely can change things. Yep. Just the way you talk to people, a huge thing. And again, not even on the court, that's completely off the court too.
Yeah. I mean, that's well
because
said.
No,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, you've been at like some of the biggest levels, right? As we said, you've been at high school. I know you were an assistant coach. You were a head coach in high school. You've been at the Division II ranks where you still are. You've been at the Division I ranks. Just being on all facets, mid-major, high-major, Division II, like, what do you feel? I know you just answered, like, what's from high school to college, but is there really much of a difference from a mid-major to a high-major to a Division II to a Division III? Do you see much of a difference from each individual division from coaching in those positions?
I'll be lying to you if I say there's no difference. First of all, your paycheck.
Yeah. That's what they say the difference between the minors and the majors is fastballs and per diem.
Yeah,
curveballs and per diem. I'm sorry. Curveballs and per diem. Yeah.
Absolutely. And when you're young, Coach, and Coach, you know this, you know, when you're younger, you want to just keep going all the way up to the mountaintop, and the money piece is part of it. You want to get all the way to Duke, Carolina, Kentucky, Ohio State, Villanova. You want to be able to reach that mountaintop. But there's a certain level of happiness and there's a certain level of challenges of that happiness that go along with it. For me, I was one of those people that tried to navigate, okay, let me see how far I can really take this thing. But you come to a point where it's still about relationships. It's still about 5-on-5 and being able to maximize the potential of a team. It's still about trying to insult your culture and fight for that culture every day. It's about relationships with your administration, with your president, with your fans, with the people that help want to inject money into your program. It's about the relationship with your coaches, with your fellow assistants, with your managers, with your student athletes. That's a big key. So as much as the levels, and I kid about the paycheck, but that is part of somebody's why. Okay, I'm not mad at you. But for me, as long as you have those core values of why you do this, then I feel like everything else is going to take care of itself. So I feel like that is relevant. I feel like that there is no any difference. As long as you're true to yourself and as long as you have those core values that you believe in and they vertically align with the school, with the administration, with your coaching staff, and all the way down to your players, everybody involved, then everything else to me would just take care of itself, no matter if you're at your coaching junior varsity at Woodside High School or you're an assistant coach, for in my case, at Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm. No, no doubt, man. No doubt.
That paycheck definitely sits differently, though.
But the paycheck is different.
That's the real thing. It's real now.
The paycheck is different.
Dollars make sense. Yeah, no question.
It makes sense.
I was talking about this recently with one of my friends, and I was saying, like, the difference between, in my personal opinion, is just Division III and Division I. Obviously, the amount of money a program has. Obviously, the resources a program has. I think that's the evident one. But then from the specific players, is like Division I guys are just more athletic or maybe more stronger. They're IQ-wise, maybe it's not that – I wouldn't necessarily say there's much of a difference IQ-wise, depending on, obviously, there's individuals where you would say, yeah, this is a one-off for each, but I feel like the game is all the game itself. It's just you have more athletic, bigger, stronger, faster guys at one level in comparison to the other.
Coach, let me tell you something. I'm going to refute that a little bit, okay?
Okay.
Because I got slapped in the mouth last year at East Stroudsburg, okay? So okay. Anybody that knows those teams up in the PSAC area, East, okay? Okay, so that's what I didn't know really outside of the CIAA when I played. Because I spent all of my coaching career at Division I. So I didn't really know how good Division II basketball is. And we have a Division III powerhouse in my area in Christopher Newport and Virginia Wesleyan as well. So when we have these conversations about levels, okay, yes, Division I, you're going to have some bigger, faster, maybe stronger. From a physical standpoint, skill, okay. But when you talk about Division II and Division III, those kids got that boulder on their shoulder, right? And so they practice with a purpose. You know, they don't have the big-time practice facility that Coach Major is in right now. They're lucky if they can get 45 minutes in a gym and they're going to hear the cheerleaders doing their thing. They may hear the band doing their thing. You may hear softball. So it's a different kind of thing that that we in Division II and Division III, whatever you want to call it, go through. But at the end of the day, they are student athletes who want to improve. And I'm telling you, and you could ask some Division I coaches this, that has probably been at Division II and Division III. Some Division I outfits don't want to see Division II because there's a lot of great coaches at the Division II level because they know how to do more with less. And they understand, especially when they get into a jam, they've been here before. That's their DNA. That's what they do. And you have the resources, the money, the paycheck, all of that part of it. But at the end of the day, that's about it. Because if a Division II kid can come in and can break the will of a Division I kid, that Division I is going to get beat because of the hunger and the drive and the passion. Can you imagine you taking a kid on a recruiting visit and he may have left Virginia Commonwealth University or East Carolina University or Old Dominion University or Norfolk State University, just in my area. And then they have to come down to Elizabeth City State University. For me, I got a leg up because I went there. I'm a Viking. That's who I am. And kids that come to Division II and come to places like Elizabeth City State University, you're there because you actually, number one, you want to get a degree, okay? Because the odds are in your favor. Are you going to go pro? It's not as high as it is if you'll go to the other outfits in Division I. So you want to be able to go get a degree first, and then you want to be able to play and have a great college basketball experience. And still be able, for me, this is where my Division I acumen come in. I still treat my program at Elizabeth City State as if I'm at Old Dominion University. You know, the time frame of a kid's day, you're expected to get in the gym. Kids that, you know, just like anywhere else, coach's not going to recruit anybody that don't love the game of basketball. What's the same thing with the guys with Division II and Division III? They love basketball, and they just want to be able to compete and do it at a high level.
No question. You actually just took us a little bit under the hood of Elizabeth City State. I'm going to ask you to lift the hood a little higher because we talked about this before, but if you don't mind sharing it, because I think it's really good. Just briefly take us through the four letters ECSU and how that relates to your team's core values. We talked about this, and I have the greatest, I admire you already, but when you laid this out for me, I thought it was terrific. So if you don't mind getting
absolutely into that a little bit. And coach, I'm glad you said that because I love my school and my school, and we'll talk about this a little later, but for the E in ECSU, the E stands for effort. No matter what you do in life, you do it with 100% effort. And it's not really just about the basketball piece. It's about academically. It's about how you serve your community. It's about everything you do it with 100% effort. We want to be the hardest working, hardest playing team program in the country. And they don't take a lot of skill to do that. Okay. That's just a mentality. That's just an attitude. So that E stands for effort. The C, it was culture, but now it's consistency. Being able to do the right things every single day. The decisions that you make is not only will affect you, but it will affect your teammates. It could affect your family. It could affect your institution. And so being consistent every day will be able to take care of yourself as a young man or a young woman. No, the S is a standard. And I think Coach Mike Tomlin is one of the greatest coaches ever. And he has this saying, the standard is the standard. The way that you look, the way that you dress, the way that you play, the way that you go to class, the way that you walk across campus, the way that you walk in the community, there's a certain standard that you must have. And so the way that we play, the way that we practice, the way that we compete, the standard is the standard. And you just do, when you fall short of that standard, then you fall short of being at Elizabeth City State University, academically, on the court, and the community. So that's another pillar for ECSU. And then the final one, the U is uncommon. Just be uncommon. And my example of being uncommon is the common man or the common woman wakes up at a certain time of the day and they want to be average. You got options if you want to be average. You got options. If you uncommon people, they do things different from common. they want to be great. They want to be elite. And that's not just basketball. That's just being a human being. That's just being a student. That's just being a good person. Everything that you do, just be uncommon. So many times, especially as Black men and women, people of color, there is a certain standard that people see us as. And so we have to rise above that and be able to just be a human being. And that's where my uncommon pitch is to all of my student athletes, is that everything that you do in life, you want to do it at a high level. And people, stereotypically, they don't see people of color as being uncommon. They see us as people that kind of the old getting in trouble and making bad decisions, bad choices, poverty, all that kind of stuff. No, rise above that and be uncommon and maximize your potential to be the best version of yourself.
Hmm. I think you just signed Dougie right there. He might have a year left. I don't know. Dougie might be.
Come on, Doug. Come on.
Yeah.
If you Dougie, can shoot on the basket.
No, Dougie's a stretch four. I call him the poor man's foreman. Dougie can shoot that field, man.
Hey, Dougie, if only I hit it, I had a year of eligibility left, coach, we'd be in a conversation off of this.
Oh, boy. If
only I had a year.
Dougie got a strap, man. He'll let that thing go now.
You can't turn down shooting.
I was a Division III guy myself, so I completely get like the – I coached in a Division III, played a Division III, so I fully get it. Definitely is, especially for that. Like, you got to fully buy in. And I'm glad you went over those, the core values and everything, because a lot of times programs have core values. They say them, but they don't necessarily harp on them or actually live by them. Sometimes they just put a poster up in the wall and it's just, hey, this is what we're going to live by. And then they're like, okay, we're done. And then they walk away from it and forget about it. Sure. If you actually ingrain those, and I feel like you saying all of that shows that you live it, because you can tell you're passionate about it. And I feel like that is the biggest difference of the people who put it up on the wall in comparison to what you're saying, is you're living it and it slowly trickles down into everybody else. Whereas people who put it up on a wall, they're like, hey, this is what we're going to do. And then nobody actually is following those rules because our head coach isn't doing it. And it's a full trickle down effect.
Mm-hmm. And Doug, for me, year one, I didn't do a good job of that. Let me make sure I say, it's funny, and there's somebody on this podcast that reminded me that there will never be another year one. And so I took that to heart, because what I'm telling you right now is I had to do a reassessment of myself, because I really believe what I'm saying. But this time last year, I had so many challenges, but those excuses, I didn't live it. And so I'm transparent enough. And that's why I love this podcast, because I want to be able to share with coaches the good, the bad, and the ugly. It was ugly for me. And so being able to finish last in your division and academically not do so well, and I didn't hold up my standard as a head coach with those core values that we just talked about, because sometimes I turned a blind eye to it because of who I had on my roster. That's why I can say it with passion now, because I will never have that feeling again. And again, as Coach Major shared with me and taught me, that there'll never be another year one. And the reason that I can say that is because I learned from year one.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So let me ask, if there was anything like you in particular, maybe looking back on it, was there anything that you would say or comfortable sharing? Like, this is one or two things that you noticed after your first year that you're like, I have to change this. This is what I want to work on personally. Anything in particular?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, off the court, if you have to, first of all, get to know your players in a very personal level. This generation of kids are very different. It's gone are the days of, I'm the coach, you're the player, you go play, I go coach you, we're going to have a good time. No, those days are gone. You actually have to sit down and really talk to a kid at lunch. Let him see you with your hair down. Meet them where they are. Now, you still have the responsibility of being their coach. You're not their friend. You're still going to coach them. But it also, these kids actually need to know that you care. Not just about the basketball, all right? Because so many times back in the day, it was just about the basketball. You come in, you win me some games, I get an extension, or I move on to another spot, and then I do that cycle all over again. And so these kids have caught on to that. And so with everything that's going on with them, for me, that's what I didn't do a really good job of, because where I came from, you were so much in the grind of doing your recruiting, get the next guy. What about the guy that you just got that's sitting there might be struggling and you're worrying about going to Dallas or going to Houston or going to Miami? So I've learned to pause and just say, you know what, let me deal with and get to know the guys that are most important. And those people are the guys on your current roster. So that's one thing that I really learned from last year. And then again, people really will run through a wall when they find out that you really care. And I care about Elizabeth City State University because that's who made me. Coach Mackey, my own coach, even now, I have a certain appreciation for him, and he has his office still in the building, and I'm appreciative of the moments. Even though I didn't play as much at Elizabeth City when I was a player, I appreciate what he saw in me as a man. And so that's the same approach now that I'm going to take with my guys, is to let them know that down the road I care, and I have to, and that you have to fight for that relationship every day.
I think when you realize there's a story behind every jersey, and the better that you get to know their story, then you can bark about sprinting back on defense all you like. Yeah. Because if they feel that you're trying to get to know their story and they get to know yours, now you're in truth-telling mode. Mm-hmm. And if you're in truth-telling mode, that gives you a chance to be in love-giving mode. And so when love and truth are both firing together, now you got something. But there's a story behind every jersey. And that is probably the single biggest thing in this landscape right now that's so transactional. They have to feel like you're one of the few people in their lives that doesn't want anything. Because now, because they have access to more things financially, that crowd of people that want something is bigger and bigger. Agent, obviously you got your family and your immediate circle. I get that. They belong. Yeah. But there's other people gathering in the second and third rows and then the back row raising their hand saying, hey, you know, what can I get $5,000, man? I want to get this recording studio started or whatever the case may be. I don't know. But they have to feel from us that we're one of the few people that I don't want anything. I just want the best.
Absolutely.
I want you to be your absolute best in everything you do. And you have to partner with them on that. That's a challenge. But again, to me, that's good problems. The challenge of getting to know your players better. Yeah. That's good problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Coach, and again, now, and this is my, I've wrestled with this as a head coach, especially at Elizabeth City State University, because you wear so many hats, man. When you're a Division I assistant, you do what you do. You have your scouts, and then you have recruiting, and then you have other things. But boy, at Elizabeth City State, I may have to work a football game. I may have to be a security guard. I may have to go over to the chancellor's office and speak to a class, or go to a class and just do that. And then I may have to go and do something in town. And so there's certain things. And that can compromise your time with your players. I have a great athletic director in James Dubose. But one of the things that he loves to do is to bring you along to be able to speak to different people. Now, for me, it's exciting because I get a chance to talk about my school. Now, I don't think no one in America could talk about Elizabeth City State University more than I can because I lived it. I know what that looks like. But again, all of that stuff can... Your time has got to be in a way where you organize, where you don't forget the people that are most important in your program, and those are the players. The players are important in everything that you do.
Man. Coach, you have given us great info going underneath the hood of ECSU, going underneath the hood of your career so far. But just really to give it a full nutshell, to glimpse all the way back into the beginning, if we were to put you back, or really just looking back on your career, knowing what you know now, is there any advice you could share with your younger self starting in the coaching profession? And what would that advice be?
Be patient, be humble, and do a great job, or try to do a great job every single day. Don't get too far ahead of yourself where you don't enjoy the ride. And it's okay to stop at a convenience store and take a break and just sit there and just figure out, okay, this is where I am. Let me figure out, instead of me thinking about three exits down the road of where I'm trying to go, it's okay to stay in the moment and do the best job that you possibly can, even at that pit stop, even at that convenience store. And I would tell a younger John Richardson that what God has for you will be for you. So you don't have to worry about trying to outwork and trying to shine and all that kind of stuff, because that plan is already laid out for you. The only thing that you have to do is just be very consistent and be disciplined every day. And if you can do that, if John Richardson III could have done that at age 22, he probably would have been better off. My family structure would probably be better, because as far as going through life and challenges and all that kind of stuff, if I was just patient and humble and not trying to be ambitious, because you have goals and all of that, but just enjoy the ride and surround yourself with like-minded people that are going to advocate for you and that are champions for you. If I had to do it all over again, because there are a lot of people that are there, like Coach said, in third row, that when things are going a little bit, when they're going good, they want a piece of you. And so those people have a way, when they're in your spirit, they have a way of pulling you down. But the people that might be kind of over in the corner that you really don't look over there and acknowledge, but those are your biggest advocates. Those are the people that you might want to get to know and talk to. They may be, i.e., a custodian. They may be, i.e., a librarian. They may be, i.e., administrative assistant that can give you nuggets to tell you, look, slow down. You're going to be fine. You are a good coach. You're going to have dreams and aspirations of doing it big, but just remain humble and be patient.
Mm. Perfect. And that's one of those messages that is just, I feel so overlooked too. The patience, just patience. Like, it is so overlooked nowadays. And I say it all the time, and I always get on my soapbox about the whole social media, because although I love it, I hate it. And it's, everybody sees like, oh, my good friend just got this new job, and why aren't I not there? I'm doing the same work as him. We're not in the same situation, but we came from the same area. And you just put so much pressure on yourself that everybody just wants to see it overnight. So you cannot oversay, be patient. So I'm glad you said that.
It's so important, guys. It's so important. You got to stay true to yourself. And I didn't learn that until I reached basically 50, you know. So again, if I can help anyone that's coming into the business at age 22, 23 years old, man, I would have been a whole lot better off if I would have done some of the things that I just said, just being patient and enjoy the ride and surrounding myself with like-minded people.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, man, before Dougie lands a plane here, as I like to say, number one, appreciate your friendship. Golly, we got to be going on close to 20 plus years here. Chasing Woodside High School basketball players around when I'm coming down there to recruit. Yeah. And he always let me in the gym, didn't kick me out, let me hang around afterwards. But listen, man, I'm so happy for you. Because with everything you just said, and I know you have your woulda, couldas, and shouldas that we all do, but with all that said, here you are. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. And you're at an unbelievable place. There's nobody that cares about that place more than you. And like I said, you guys are just getting started. I'm excited to follow you guys. I'm tracking the Vikings already, so that goes without saying. But again, appreciate your friendship and just. Today was phenomenal, man. I knew it would be. I was telling Doug, we got to get this dude, but this was great, brother. You're a real one.
Yeah. Coach, I've had a chance to be around some people, including yourself, and I want to thank you publicly. There's no one on earth that deserves the position that you're in right now. And I didn't have to kick Coach Major out the gym. Coach Major, understand this, Doug. Coach Major is relentless. And when he sees a bone, he's a dog now. So when he sees a bone, he's going to attack it. But you can just tell guys that you follow over the years, and Coach Major is a real one and himself. And this is just the beginning. You know how you got the resurrection?
Resurrection. Yeah. So I identified with a cat named Lazarus recently. So absolutely. Trust me, I know exactly what you're saying.
And just as much as Coach, you are following my journey, Lord knows I'm following yours. And we've had conversations. I know where this is going for you. So
thank you, man.
I can't thank you enough as well.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you. More talks to come. We're not done.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Coach, no, thank you. As we always said, I know we were joking before we hopped on, but this is now, when we're recording this, the beginning of the season. You're just about to be underway, and to be able to take a minute of your day, a couple minutes of your day. Thank you very much. We really do appreciate it. Looking for moving forward, ECSU on the map. Definitely going to keep the Vikings in mind and look forward to seeing how you guys go this year. And best of luck moving forward.
Thank you so much, fellas. Thank you so much for everything you do. Thank you so much for what you do for our game and for the business.
No, you got it, man. Thank you. Our honor.
And for everybody out there listening, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. That does it for another one. Honestly, feels great. Midway through the season when this comes out, so hopefully everybody's going and doing well. Other than that, keep working, and all you coaches, keep rising. Your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. See you all later.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.